Good afternoon, everyone. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, Tuesday, February 2nd. Can we have the roll call, please?
Representative Hernandez?
Here, I'm trying to turn on my video. Give me a second.
Representative Levy?
Here by video.
Representative Marsh?
Here by video.
Representative Smith is excused. Vice Chair Pham?
Present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson present by video. Okay, thank you for that. Mr. Alanak, we have only one item on our agenda. I'm opening this informational meeting. Will you please introduce this for us?
Sure. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The presentation by Jamie that you're about to get is another piece of the property tax system. It relates to the senior deferral program. There are a couple of bills this session related to the program. So Jamie is going to walk you through an orientation.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jamie McGovern, the property tax economist at the Legislative Revenue Office. And I'm going to share my screen here and go through a program that the Department of Revenue administers called the Disabled and Senior Citizens Property Deferral Program. Let me see here how I can do this. If somebody could let me know when it's up.
I see the first slide of a presentation.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Okay, so this program is, as I mentioned, administered by the Department of Revenue, and it encompasses both disabled citizens and senior citizens. And I think one of the important things to note about this program is it's part of the property tax system. So in Oregon, we have obviously property taxes, and you're probably all really familiar with property tax exemptions where individuals don't have to pay property taxes, either as part of a program to get investment or to help people provide assistance. This is different than a property tax exemption. It's one of the rare examples where it's more of a program in the sense that the property taxes do get paid. So that means that the local governments and the schools are held harmless in that sense. And the property taxes just get paid, at least for the time being, by this fund that is administered by the Department of Revenue. And so what happens is if you qualify for this program, and we'll talk a little bit about that, that the Department of Revenue pays property taxes on your behalf, and then sort of at the end of the program, so to speak, this can occur when you pass away or in other situations, and then your property taxes with interest would get paid back. So we'll talk about the details. But it's a program, not a property tax exemption. And so that means that the property taxes still get paid. And it's important to note that there's a lien on the property, and this can affect people's status when it comes to mortgages. And we can also talk a little bit more about that. So currently, the program is set so that individuals must apply between January 1st and April 15th. And the simple interest at 6% accrues annually. And some people in the past have talked about whether, you know, the number of 6%, where that falls in terms of the market or reasonableness. But this has been a constant number throughout the program, even while interest rates in the economy have gone up over 7% or down to 2%. So it's a little bit of stability for these people that are in the program for a long term, in terms of being getting their property taxes paid as an assistance program. That's the 6% is a stable rate. Okay, so I'm just going to talk a little bit about the eligibility. So one of the things that would make you a senior citizen, you'd be 62 years or older, or this program also applies to people who are eligible for disability. So the Department of Revenue tracks payments to the local government on behalf of the residents, both by disabled and senior citizens. And you can see some of this in our basic facts each year. So we report some of these annual numbers, and we'll talk about that as well. You also have to have owned and lived in your home for the past 5 years. There's a condition where you could be in the program if you had previously been in the program and you haven't lived in your current house for more than 5 years, but you essentially were downsizing and transitioning from the program or from a different house to a smaller house, but you still wanted to remain in the program. And it puts a cap on your net worth, but this does not include the value of your home that you are seeking to enroll in the program. And there's a current value of household income of $46,500. That is also indexed to inflation. So, of course, this is meant as sort of a lower income assistance program. And the property value of the home that you seek to enroll in the program has a cap on the value, but that is set by county. And I'll provide some data on that and the value of that cap, and it depends on how long you've lived in your house. And it also, there's a clause on not having a reverse mortgage, but there's been recent legislation about expanding the program to include specific residents of homes with reverse mortgages and some historical reverse mortgages. So I'll touch on that, but as a general rule, the program doesn't seek to enroll all homeowners with reverse mortgages. Okay, so this is just a graph over time of the accounts that have been enrolled in the program. So obviously initially when the program first rolled out, possible that it wasn't well known, but it was relatively small. It grew over time. And you can also see that during times of economic strife, so to speak, and the Great Recession, there's, broadening interest in the program. And then we've had some decline in the program participation over the past several years. And this isn't tracked by the Department of Revenue for specific reasons, but the decline can come from lots of reasons. People might max out of it due to their income. They might have a lack of interest. They could sell their home. There's lots of reasons why people may opt out of the program or fall out of the program. And the Department of Revenue distinguishes between individuals that are disqualified from the program and individuals that are inactive. So for instance, if you're in the program and the Department of Revenue is paying property taxes on your behalf, you actually have to be recertified into the program. I think that the Department of Revenue is tasked with recertifying individuals every 3 years, but my understanding is that they actually do that on a two-year cycle. So they would check to see whether you still qualify for the program or some metric has made it so that you're ineligible. And if you become inactive because of one of these ineligibility requirements, you're sort of on pause. That means the Department of Revenue will no longer pay the property taxes for the current year, but they're not going to make you immediately pay back all your old property taxes. And maybe you re-enroll down the road when your eligibility picks up again. So the number of accounts or participation in the program has decreased over the recent years, say the recent 10 years. But if we look at the total tax and repayment, we can see what's happening here. The repayments that the Department of Revenue is collecting and putting into the fund is the red line. And so in general, that has been growing, but during the Great Recession, there was a big dip there and repayments declined. And then that just picked up again. That's picked up again for several reasons. Following the Great Recession, or the beginning of the Great Recession, there was some legislation to help improve the stability of the fund. And then also individuals have been able to repay at a more successful rate. And so the blue line, which is the tax that the Department of Revenue is paying out on an annual basis, is currently lower than the amount that the Department of Revenue is collecting. And so what that means is that whenever the red line is above the blue line, that the fund is growing at that point in time. And so in general, for the past decade, the fund has been collecting more than it is putting out. And this is a dedicated fund, just as an aside, for the purpose of this program. Okay, and this just actually is possibly redundant. It summarizes what you might have gleaned from the past slide, that because the collections recently have been higher than the repayments, the fund has been growing. So it's right around $50 million sitting in this fund currently. So what I had mentioned is that I was going to discuss the one component of the eligibility of the program that has to do with the value of the home. And so this is a snapshot by each county. And these numbers, the upper number, which is the value of the home, that is a maximum threshold for you being eligible into the program at the beginning, that 5-year mark. If you've just lived in your home for 5 years and you try to apply, be in the program, this is meant for individuals that need assistance. And so the goal of considering modest homes, so to speak, is what's reflected here. But the longer you live in your home, the higher, essentially your home can be allowed to appreciate within the program and you won't be kicked out. And so that number at the bottom, the lighter orange number, say for instance, in the case of Baker, we moved from 128,000 and changed to 320. That's over the course of 20 years. So this would be the value at 25 years, so the 20 plus five. So at 25 years, your home could have appreciated from 128,000 to 320,000, and you would be able to still remain in the program and not be forced out. And there are brackets in between. I just didn't include all of those in the graph. The Department of Revenue, the Department of Revenue posts this data and spreadsheet on their website under the Senior Deferral Program, and then you can look at each of the brackets for all the years for all the different counties. And the idea, of course, of differentiating by county is that in some counties, it's much more expensive to live, and the idea of having a modest home in Multnomah County might be very different than the idea of having a modest home in Baker County. And so these are determined by essentially the median house price in that that county. Although it is no longer in operation, I thought I would include this Operation Project Independence, because in the years past when I've discussed property taxes and the senior proper the tax deferral program. The question of the stability of the fund has come up. And so I just wanted to speak a little bit about what happened around the time of the Great Recession. The fact that in 2008, 2009 to 2011 or 12, there started becoming problems with the fund. This occurred for several reasons. One of the reasons, of course, was suddenly there were lots of individuals that were struggling to make their payments back to the fund. So repayments were difficult, and the payments out were also increasing. So that was a problem. But there was also this other component at the time, which was called Operation Project Independence. And essentially, when some money had accumulated in the fund through the senior deferral program having more collections than repayments, then that money was swept into the general fund under certain terms. And so that started out at several hundred thousand dollars, but then it moved to several millions of dollars. And it caused sort of in a long-term view, a difficulty for administering the fund. And then as part of the legislation that was passed after the recession started to try and assist with the stability of the fund, this project independence and the transfers were ceased. And I did also mention that I was going to speak about reverse mortgages. So they're not in wholesale excluded from the from individuals participating in the fund. But in general, the default is that there are not properties that have reverse mortgages. However, if you had a reverse mortgage that was executed prior to 2011, you still may be eligible for the fund or eligible for the program, regardless of when you apply to the program. The whole problem with reverse mortgages really stems around the idea that this is in some sense a reverse mortgage. As you are in the program longer, the lien on your property through the Department of Revenue becomes larger. And so at the time that you say, if you die or if you sell your home or your children inherit your home, if they want to sell, for whatever reason, if your participation in the program was closed out and you had to repay, there's a question of how much equity is left in your home. And so obviously in Oregon, generally speaking, your property would be appreciating, but also, you know, your property taxes might be several thousand dollars a year. And the bank that you hold a mortgage with, they don't like being second in line for mortgages. And so there's this question of who comes first. And I'll just say, because people might think about how much your home appreciates each year, to how much the Department of Revenue is placing a lien on your home every year. We have the 6% interest, but on average, the annual repayment that the Department of Revenue pays out in property taxes on behalf of each participant in the program is around $2,600. So that's about the amount that that gets imposed on your property value each year. And then I think it was 2019. These years have passed recently, kind of quickly. HB 2587, there was an adjustment to the program so that you could also enroll in the program if you got a reverse mortgage between those years of 2011 and 2016. But to make sure that there wasn't a compromise in the integrity and stability of the fund as it stands, you have to have 40% equity in your home or more, whereas historically that number was, I believe, 20%. And that concludes my presentation on the senior deferral program as the Department of Revenue administers it. And I'm open for questions.
Thank you for the presentation. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I am wondering, Jamie, if we have any idea of how participants are informed of what the mounting financial obligation on their home is as they stay in the program. I say this because I had a dear friend who lived into her 90s and went into this program literally decades before she died, and she was very surprised at some point when she was doing some work around her house to find out how much she owed as a result of participation in this.
Thank you, Representative Marsh, Chair Nathanson. That's a question I'll have to get back to you on. I was speaking the other day with the Department of Revenue of generally how they communicate with potential participants in the program and what information is available on their website. And that is a question that I missed or didn't think of. I am aware of the communication that they have as people start to consider entering the program, for instance, if they are late on their property taxes. But once they're already in the program, I don't know how they access that information. So I'll get that to you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jamie, you mentioned early in the presentation that this is not an exemption. It's a program managed by a Department of Revenue. And so I'm just curious, is this just part of Department of Revenue's budget and they set aside enough of this? And that, I mean, there was a pot set aside initially, and then it's funded by the repayment of those of what's owed later on, or does general fund money have to continue to replenish the pot?
Thank you. I think I've stopped sharing. Thank you, Rep. Reschke, Chair Nathanson. I can check on whether all those years ago there was initial seed money to start the program. Back in, I think, 1979. However, the program is self-sustained and self-contained in that fund. So currently, any money that goes in or out of the fund is solely from the individuals repaying and the Department of Revenue paying property tax on the behalf. And I think that was part of the idea of the ending the Operation Project Independence is to stop and the sort of unrelated outflow of money from the program. But I think your question is also about inflow of money. And I can say that there is not currently, and in any recent history that I'm aware of, general fund money flowing into the program. But I can find out about initial seed money, something like that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, a follow-up question?
Sure.
Thank you. So, Jamie, I'm thanks for using the right terms, seed and fund instead of a pot of money, I guess. But anyways, I'm also curious about kind of the length of these deferrals. So it sounds like it's self-replenishing. So if we don't have payment on a lot of these, then a lot of money can't be used for future ones until the payment's made back. So I'm just wondering, what's the average timeline as far as how long people have been in this program? Have they been in it for 5 years on average or 10 years? And what's that look like over time? Is that amount growing as people age and are able to live longer? Are we not getting repaid that money? Because I'm assuming that the payback comes when they either opt out or they pass away and then it's an inheritance property for somebody else.
Rep. Reschke, Chair Nathanson, thank you. Yes, all those things are true. People can opt out at any time. Excuse me. Also, when they pass away, their debt gets repaid. On top of that, people are able and allowed to make payments at any time. So I'll say that I know. So I will check on the average length of time that people enter into the program. The fact that people are able, the majority of the participants currently are senior citizens. So in our basic facts, we break this out into disabled and senior citizens. So if you're a disabled citizen, then you may be able to enter the program obviously earlier than 62. But senior citizens would start being able to enter the program at the age of 62. And so you might think of the timeline that they're in that program as like 62 plus, say 30 years or something like this. I will find out about the average timeline for those cohorts. That being said, over that one slide that I showed you, that the amount of the fund that's in there now, which is currently around $50 million, and it has been growing for approximately the last decade. And so what that means is, even if people are living longer now, or not exiting from the program or paying back from the program now, the money that's in the fund currently, the dedicated fund, would go towards paying back those property taxes until new payments come in, if that makes sense.
Thank you, Jamie, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Good. Any other questions or comments about this? As Mr. Alanak indicated, there are at least a couple, maybe more, bills that have been referred to our committee. We don't know yet whether we'll be hearing them or working them, but there are bills related to this. So it helps to have the background information and the understanding before we start working on individual bills. So is there anything else that you would like in the way of background information for this program? Not seeing any hands going up.
Madam Chair, I'll just say that this is the third time I've heard this presentation, so I'm getting better. So that's good. So I appreciate the review. This is a pretty straightforward program, but again, appreciate the time LRO and that you set aside for this. So thank you.
Sure, and it's also helpful for us to get the technical jargon like seed and fund. Any other comments or questions? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. And on that same front, just providing the technical background, can you talk a little bit about where that $50 million is, who's managing it, and whether it's invested on our behalf?
Thank you, Representative Marsh, Chair Nathanson. I can look into the investments that the fund is participating in, if any, and I will say that the Department of Revenue administers the fund. Beyond that, I'd have to do a little bit of research to find out what other activity is going on in terms of the investment of the fund.
Well, some of this relates to just where Oregon money is banked, you know, through the state treasury. It's somewhere, and some of it might be existing in short or medium or long-term accounts. So it might be a step past Department of Revenue where the answer could be.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Thanks, Rep. Chair Nathanson, and thanks, Rep. Mark. I think that's a really good question, and I'll look more into it.
Thank you.
Anything else? Rep. Smith, I want to note that Rep. Smith did indeed join us quite a while ago, but it looks like you've joined by audio. Is there anything you would like to add or comment on? Not hearing anything. Anyone else today? Rep. Pham, Rep. Levy? Rep. Hernandez?
No.
Representative Reschke?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to echo what Representative Marsh said as far as it'd be interesting to know if what the communication of that obligation is every year. Does DOR send out notices saying that now you owe $30,000 or $5,000 or whatever, so that somebody isn't caught off guard because they forgot that they were in the program or enrolled way back when. So I think that's a good point by Representative Marsh, that I'd like to know that we do have a mechanism, or DOR has a mechanism, to communicate, and it's frequent so that people don't get caught behind.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I just wanted to ask a question about the racial disaggregation of the participants of this program. It seems like a really wonderful program, and just curious about the outreach and the makeup of the participants. Thank you.
Representative Pham, Chair Nathanson. I will say that in my communication with the Department of Revenue to try and find out whether they proactively reached out and recruited potential participants, or how participants were identified, what I found was a lot of the times when individuals became late or thought they would be late when they got their property tax notice in the fall, that's when they started seeking out options, and this became available, or they became aware that this was available to them. So in terms of that first outreach and how individuals are identified, I know that that is this one of the main avenues. I don't have information, but I will look into the existing makeup of the demographics and individuals in the program, depending on what the Department of Revenue tracks. I'm not sure what they track on that front, so I'll find out what they have in terms of that information. And also try and get a little more clarity on that question of other methods of outreach that they may have that we didn't discuss. So I can work on a little more information than that.
Great, thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gang, I really apologize. I'm doing my best to participate, and for some reason, my video is just being a nightmare. So I have been listening the whole time. I kind of like Rep. Reschke, I've heard this presentation a couple times, but it's always good to be reminded. And so I appreciate Legislative Revenue sharing their thoughts. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for the disruption I'm causing the committee. Please know it's not intentional.
I'm glad you can join us. Anything else for the day? Mr. Allenack, do you have some closing observations for us before we end this informational meeting?
I don't. You touched on it about the coming bills. It'll be yet to see exactly what gets done with the program. I think at a minimum, probably an extension of the program. It's due to sunset. But just so committee members are aware, some bills are in-house revenue. Some bills are in other policy committees that will be making their way to revenue.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. I don't see anything else that needs to be done for the day. The informational meeting is concluded, and we are adjourned.